Welcome, everyone, to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everyone. Here today to pay tribute to the only actor who has been killed by a Terminator, an alien, and a Predator. That, of course, an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well, near and dear to our hearts. Not a leading man, not a character actor. I'm going to call him a Kevry man. Bill Paxton.
Indeed, Bill Paxton, having passed away this past Saturday, February 25th, 2017, at the age of 61. Sad news. I think if you've enjoyed movies in the last 30 years, this is one that hurt. If you've enjoyed some great TV shows in the last 15 years, this is one that hurt. Certainly well liked. It was great to see in the subsequent days tributes by Rob Lowe, by James Cameron, reflecting on their own personal memories with him, and really quite a blow, Pete.
Even Jennifer Aniston at the Oscars and tearing up there really put a lump in your throat, and it came as a surprise. I mean, they say that it was as a result of complications from a surgery, but you heard the news, and first off, was not a guy you thought was 61 years old, and 61 years old in today's day and age in 2017 is still so very young to be taken. But just a guy, no one seems to have an ill word about this guy. And in Hollywood, where we know, of course, that things run fast and loose, here married to his wife for 30 years, and so many roles, Matt and I talking off mic here before we recorded, just, you know, not the guy, but a guy that this movie is known as something he contributed to in a way that it is the sum of its parts.
Someone who witnessed history as well as a boy raised in Fort Worth, Texas. He was there the day that Kennedy was assassinated. One of the people in the crowd, there's a photo that exists of him. So someone who has led this varied life, went to Hollywood, did not find success right away, did find some success working on film crews, and that's where he met James Cameron before Cameron had done much of anything, and certainly a pairing between the two, and indeed, Pete, a natural starting point, I think, for a lot of people when you reflect back on Bill Paxton's roles.
Guy's a couple cans short of a six-pack.
You're close. Give them to me now.
Fuck you, asshole.
Well, certainly, Matt, with Terminator, not something that I viewed, hey, let me look for Bill Paxton, you know, as a 9 or 10 year old seeing that for the first time, but something that on repeated viewings, wow, that's Bill Paxton, and he was in Terminator, and I remember the scene with naked Arnold Schwarzenegger and him giving him a hard time. And it's so emblematic of the roles that he played. You know, yeah, the whole thing I mentioned at the top of the podcast, the only guy to have the geek trifecta of dying, you know, up against these iconic bad guys and monsters, but that tying them together, you know, you throw in weird science, you throw in so many of these other things that he's in, you know, Matt's, you know, favorite movie of all time in Titanic. And part of the reason, you know, Matt took up oceanography and everything there. I just think he's got such a unique place in film history.
Well, we will get to discussing Titanic, the greatest color movie of all time, in a little bit. But Pete, you mentioned Weird Science, a movie that for people of our generation, I think was required viewing. Pete, this notion that you could get that kind of hotness on demand, perhaps a movie that has moved from essential viewing to more kind of cult status, but of course, Bill Paxton playing the dastardly older brother, Chet.
Here's the bottom line, Wyatt. I'm telling Mom and Dad everything. I'm even considering making up some sh**.
All right, Chet, name your price.
$175.00, cash. New bills crisp and clean, in my wallet by 7 a.m.
Well, certainly with Weird Science, like you said, you could not be expected to live in the 1980s and not at least be passingly familiar with the plot of the teens make a supermodel movie, on top of the fact that it featured a, shall we say, beyond hot Kelly LeBrock at the time. And, you know, here's this mouthy, mean older brother with a flat top who delivers an enormously iconic line about, you know, feeding him a greasy pork sandwich served in a dirty ashtray. But yeah, I mean, he just, again, he just inhabits between this and, you know, Aliens, just inhabits this jerky space when it seems like the guy was anything but a jerk.
Well, it's that dual nature that leads us indeed to Aliens, Pete, where in the character of Hudson, he's somehow both simultaneously jerky as well as incredibly, incredibly sympathetic.
Hey, Vasquez, have you ever been mistaken for a man?
No. Have you?
Independently targeting particle beam failings.
What?
For I have a city with this puppy. We got tactical smart missiles, base plasma pulse rifles, RPGs. We got sonic electronic ball breakers.
Well, that's great. That's just great, man. Now what the f*** are we supposed to do? We're some real pretty s*** now, man.
Are you finished?
Game over, man. It's game over. What are we gonna do now?
What are we gonna do? Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
More than any other role, Matt, I would argue this is the one he's going to go down in history as having played. It's so much more than the others. There's the cowardly aspect to what we just heard, but you know, Hudson has a whole arc, as you know, well-rounded characters should in Aliens, and ultimately to go out the way that he does. And it's a role that I don't think we can envision other actors ever playing.
Yeah, and in a weird way, it's probably the most memorable role of the movie. Certainly not more memorable than Ripley, but equal to that. And I don't know, there's a human pathos to the character of Hudson.
And then it looked like he had plateaued, Matt. I mean, he makes Navy SEALs with Michael Biehn in 1990. He follows that up with a part in Predator 2 that's, you know, certainly less than Aliens, more than Terminator. Yeah, it kind of seemed like that was it.
Reading Rob Lowe's reflections of this time period, that's around the time, 1994, when they starred in Frank and Jesse. That's Rob Lowe and, of course, Bill Paxton. And Rob Lowe has this great story of they're on horses, it's snowing, Bill's kind of looking off into the distance, a little sad, not while filming, and Rob Lowe says, "Hey, what's going on?" And Bill Paxton says, "I'm almost 40, I feel like this acting thing isn't really going to take off for me. You know, I feel like things aren't working out the way they're supposed to. And then after that began the next great turn of his career, some of which we're going to talk about here. But after that comes True Lies, Apollo 13, Twister, Titanic, A Simple Plan, Mighty Joe Young, U-571, and so on and so on. Really,
let's not forget Tombstone at the very beginning of that in 93.
Absolutely. All wonderful movies, but certainly a brand new level of audience exposure when we get to True Lies.
Sure. See, it's not just a car, it's a total image. An identity you have to go for. This isn't some high-tech sports car. Tell you the truth, it doesn't even handle that great. But that's not the idea, is it? What are we talking about here? You're right.
Absolutely.
But it's not enough. If you really want to close escrow, well, you gotta have an angle.
Suppose you have an angle.
It's killer. I mean, look at me. I'm not that much to look at. No, I can be honest. But I got them lining up. And not just the skanks either. Well, some are.
So what's the angle?
Oh, no. Sorry.
True Lies, Matt, is particularly dear to me. They were filming in Newport, Rhode Island, right after I had reported to Providence for college. And it was a whole big thing. And actually, we were in Newport the first weekend I was away at college, and Cameron is there, and Schwarzenegger is there, and Paxton is there, and Jamie Lee Curtis is there. You know, they filmed the big scene with the embassy and the whole tango and everything there. And again, he inhabits this creep, memorable creep role. And makes it his in a way that I can't think of other people in Hollywood that, you know, inhabit that space yet have such a great reputation as a person.
There's a certain argument to be made that he, as we're going to discuss in certainly future clips, he's the glue in True Lies. He's in no way the star. I mean, this is Schwarzenegger at his absolute peak. Bill Paxton is certainly by no means the easiest on the eyes. That belongs to Jamie Lee Curtis. He's maybe not the funniest. That's Tom Arnold. He's not the bad guy in Art Malik or the femme fatale in Tia Carrere. But Bill Paxton is the guy in all of us that you're trying to reach for a little bit more than maybe you should. And sometimes that's us, and sometimes that's the person that passes us. And when it's us and you sit and go, okay, I grew as a person, you're happy. And when it's the Bill Paxton type, when it's the Simon type that passes you and then gets slapped down, that's kind of when you say justice. And he inhabits that 100%.
While his turn as Hudson in Aliens is clearly the role I will always think of him in, he starred in 1998 in A Simple Plan, a bank heist going wrong, quiet Midwestern set film with Billy Bob Thornton and Bridget Fonda that in retrospect now makes me think of the Fargo TV shows, just the way that into their lap falls several million dollars from a ransom gone wrong, and he plays Billy Bob's brother, and they're trying to keep it quiet, and they're going to split the money, and there's a third guy, and of course none of it works out. And you know, so different from his other roles in that he's the leading man and he's playing completely against the type we had come to know him. This is not Chet. This is not Hudson. This is not the slimy used car salesman who's trying to nail Jamie Lee Curtis.
Well, indeed, he had entered leading man status at this point and had done so certainly a year before with Twister.
It's back building!
It's not through yet! You're right, it's back building! We got a jumper here!
Bouncer, it's back building! You gotta track it!
Pete, I don't quite know why Twister holds such a special place in my heart. Maybe it's because there I was in high school. It was a big effects movie. I don't know that the effects have aged great, but certainly at the time, it was mind-blowing. Great cadre of actors. Again, there's kind of like the you're growing up as Bill Paxton has grown up, at least his characters. You know, there he is, kind of the square-jawed, you know, kind of late 30s guy, and you're, you know, I'm in high school saying, ah, to be that stable, and then to have trucks falling out of the sky. And just a movie that, again, it holds a special place in my heart. And again, there are, you know, he's the leading man, certainly not the lead. That's Helen Hunt. But there's that everyman quality there. He's, you know, lost his love. He's trying, or, you know, in Helen Hunt, he's trying to make the new marriage work out. He's trying to best the better prepared Cary Elwes and that crew of storm chasers. And you're sympathetic to the guy because he's just trying to do his thing, man. So then we are 3 years after, 3 to 4 years after the making of Frank and Jesse, where he thought he wasn't going to quite make it in Hollywood, or he wasn't going to quite get there, whatever the there is. That's when Jim Cameron calls him up, has him play the bookending character of Brock Lovett in what I will confidently say, Pete, again, is the greatest color movie ever made. No sarcasm, no joke there. I mean it to the heart of my ocean. And we have, again, the everyman character, but also one who's a little slimy, maybe.
Okay, quiet. We're rolling. Seeing her coming out of the darkness like a ghost ship still gets me every time. To see the sad ruin of the great ship sitting here, where she landed at 2:30 in the morning of April 15th, 1912, after her long fall from the world above.
You know, Cameron, now since even further established as the you know, protector of the deep, and, you know, one of very few people, more people have been on the surface of the moon than have been to where he has at the bottom of the Mariana Trench. But it feels like Paxton is playing a version of what James Cameron would become. Just the hubris and the monologuing. And you don't, however, when he plays these types of roles, discount it. You don't not like him either. He had this way of being sympathetic in these slimy roles.
It was around this stage of his career where he, of course, continued to act, but went behind the camera, first in 2001 for the film Frailty, later in 2005 for The Greatest Game Ever Played. Almost, you wonder at this point if he was wondering if there was a little bit of a plateau there as well, didn't quite cross over to, I don't know, to full leading man status in the early 2000s. That's around the time, though, Pete, when he heard the call of TV, heard the call of HBO, and headlined in Big Love. I remember those posters, report came out with his hand over his face and kind of that, oh, geez, kind of look with the three wedding rings. He, of course, playing a man in a plural marriage with three Mormon women.
Hey, boys. What's wrong?
I can't get him to stop.
Well, you gotta set an example, honey.
Why don't you take a time out? Hey, big guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's it.
I can't stand it a moment longer.
You better cut her a break, Nikki.
Not her. The vacuum has no suction.
What did you tell me?
I thought I could fix it.
Houdini can't do the impossible. I'll bring home a new one tomorrow. Go and make her feel better, huh?
Oh, well, I'm not Houdini.
Pete, I know on the one hand, he's not the center of that scene, but I think it really captured a certain aesthetic in Big Love where he's the dad just trying to figure out life as a dad, life as a father, life as a husband, life as a working man. He just happens to be coming home to three houses that have a connected backyard and the problems that come with three wives and however many kids he had, living the secret, so on and so forth. And I mean, he's the dad par excellence here.
I never watched Big Love. I know there's the whole controversy when he was up for an Emmy and he lost to the guy who played Dexter, who at the time was battling cancer. And there's the controversy. Did Paxton say, I lost to Dexter or I lost to cancer? I can't imagine that he would be that crass, given how much he struggled in the business, in the level that he was at to try to continue and push through. But I can absolutely appreciate him holding down this TV role for 5 years on HBO at a time when, you know, Sopranos had come through and, you know, that was really kind of their mainstay of their dramatic lineup.
Pete, also around this time was, of course, 2014's Edge of Tomorrow, which I think has become better known in home video as Live, Die, Repeat, the Tom Cruise, Emily Blunt vehicle.
I went into that film with such low expectations. I remember vividly watching it at like 5 o'clock in the morning on a weekend. Had woke up early and, you know, all right, flipping channels. All right, I'll give this one a try. I remember people saying that they appreciated it. And Matt and I have long talked that, you know, despite what you think about Tom Cruise as a person, and you can say a lot of things, he earns your $10 every single time out. That aside, I can only envision that they said, okay, for this drill sergeant that is going to wind up sending Cruise, a traitor, a deserter to the front lines of this alien invasion, that they pitched it as, this is Hudson if he had lived and gone to the dark side.
Wow. Well, I must confess I have not seen that movie. The duality of the supposed awfulness of Edge of Tomorrow, but the supposed awesomeness of Live, Die, Repeat. It's kind of this tantalizing thing, but Pete, I dare say in honor of old Bill Paxton, I will have to check it out.
Certainly dear to us is his turn, 6 episodes, although he casts a much larger shadow than that, as S.H.I.E.L.D. agent John Garrett, also Hydra sympathizer on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra!
There's 3 men in your unit. I guess they asked the wrong questions.
Until today, it was all about keeping the secret.
Are you gonna kill us?
That wasn't my plan, really. If it was, I could have done that any time I wanted. No, Coulson and I go way back. Back to the days when Fury was teaching us tactics. Clearing corners, slicing the pie.
Pete, slicing the pie, chewing through those lines, giving the exposition to share the background between Garrett and Coulson to help hammer home the betrayal. And Pete, I cannot believe that was only 6 episodes he was in. I would have thought it was 12 or 15 episodes that season.
And what makes it even tougher to swallow is how close he was with the cast of a show we've been with for, 80, 82 episodes at this point, to be as blindsided as they were. And they really thought of him as a member of the team. That show found itself while he was a member of that cast, albeit as a recurring cast member. And in many ways, what that show will always be remembered as owes itself to his turn, literally and figuratively, as S.H.I.E.L.D. agent John Garrett.
Yeah, I mean, any rewatch of that show, as you get through some of the single bottle episodes that are the show trying to find its voice in the first half of the first season, when John Garrett and his long shadow are starting to be felt, it just, that's when the show starts to take off. That's when you have the serial nature, and week to week, the show just takes off. And it was bittersweet, but ultimately a bittersweet celebration to see Chloe Bennett, Ming-Na Wen, and others not just sharing tweets but sharing pictures on Instagram. Just, you know, with Chloe Bennett, it was she had found, he had stolen Jed Whedon's set bike, and just a picture on there. And I don't have the anecdote in front of me, but
too much handsome. Told him he was too much handsome for one bike. In his response, I know.
I mean, it's just said with the wink, said with the smile. It's just phenomenal. Just phenomenal.
It is. And that he had gotten a recurring lead TV role. He was playing the, essentially the Denzel Washington character on the TV version of Training Day. In the seventh episode, he got to act with his son that will air a little later this year. And just a guy that should still be around and continuing to chew up these types of roles. He's got one more movie in the pipeline that comes out a little later this year, The Circle with Emma Watson. But Matt, he's going to be sorely missed.
Yeah. And I mean, again, the notion that he was 61, he didn't look it. He looked great. He looked healthy. And somebody who, as I said at the top of the podcast, somebody who has graced our screens, both big and small, for 30 years plus, all of these memorable roles, all these memorable projects, all these things you can go back and cherish. Somebody said to me over the weekend, anytime he was on the screen, you couldn't help but smile. And I think that is certainly true. Well, with that, Pete, we would love to hear our listeners' reflections on Bill Paxton. You can always be in touch with Fantastic Geek. That's Fantastic with PH. At fantasticgeek.com, fantasticgeek@gmail, fantasticgeek on Twitter and Instagram as well.
And facebook.com/fantasticgeek with the PH, all one word.
Well, Pete, our pop culture podcast will be back soon, but definitely glad that we've taken some time here to reflect on the life and the passing of Bill Paxton.
Game over, man. Game over.